Welcome to the Tej Talks podcast. Forget the property celebrities. We speak to relatable people with fascinating journeys, just like you. Hosted by Tej Singh, we bring you new stories, life-changing deals, and expert advice every week.
Alex, welcome to the Tej Talks podcast.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. I think you and me met at, was it PPN Knightsbridge?
It sure was about a month ago, I think.
Yeah, it was. And I think I first started speaking to your business partner, Christian, and then kind of ran into you and we had a good chat. And, you know, your story, especially given your age, which let's not reveal just yet, but given your story, it's really kind of 0 to 60 in, you know, in a very, very short space of time. So, you know, you're a real bloke. He is real, everyone. I have met him. I have shook his hand. But he's achieved so much in such a little amount of time. And that's what this show is about, speaking to real people like you and understanding your story. So let's, you know, for people who maybe aren't familiar with you on Facebook or haven't seen that video you put in the Progressive group, like, what is your story before you got into property? What were you doing?
So before, obviously, I've had a fairly short career, as I'm not that old. But before, I started my first business at 15, which was an online retailing business. That also went a bit crazy, sort of turning over 50, 60K a year, which meant I wasn't really interested in school too much, as you can probably imagine. And that was pretty much, yeah, just buying things from China in bulk and selling them everywhere I possibly could. That came to an abrupt end when Trading Standards sent a letter to my dad saying all this business activity, and they're talking about, yeah, a hell of a lot of things that I didn't understand at that age. So we went into a meeting with Trading Standards, expecting it just to be a little slap on the hand. It was quite a serious meeting, let's just say. Three guys suited and booted. The first thing they said to my dad was, Mr. Milburn, this is a serious matter. Why have you brought your son along? Which he had to reply, it's my son's business. Because I was 15 at the time, it was just a slap on the hand, and then on you go. But obviously, the entrepreneurial spirit was there. I just needed to funnel it in the right way, which is when I went to the Peter Jones Enterprise and Entrepreneurship Academy at 16. So I studied there for a couple of years. And yeah, that was a great experience, just being surrounded by like-minded people. And then obviously the idea is to start your own business, but I got offered a job, which sounded pretty exciting, traveling around the UK and Europe. So I took that job as a Wi-Fi surveyor, which is not exactly the most exciting of things. But no, that was it was probably the best thing I could have done at that time. Got me some real life experience, some work experience. Went to some fantastic places, Monaco and Zurich, and and working with people a lot older than me, which meant I could get some of their knowledge. So that took me up to last year, which is when I found property.
Wow. And so starting a business at 15 is quite unusual, shall we say. Like what kind of, like, at 15, I don't know what I was doing, playing Xbox, playing tennis on my front garden. Like how did you even think as a 15-year-old, oh, let me start a business and let me turn over amounts that adults are struggling to turn over in businesses? Like, how?
I suppose my dad's always been in business, and I've always just shown an interest in it. And I think most parents, when you say I'm ordering this for in £1,000 of a stock from China, they would have probably said, You must be crazy. Don't do it. But obviously, my parents encouraged it. So I was like, well, what to lose at 15?
Wow.
Yeah, I think that sort of just give me an idea, systemization and all the rest of it. So I had a little storeroom in the garage. When I was at school, I'd text my mom the order number, the address. She'd put it on a packet, send it to the post office. Been outsourcing from a young age.
Well, yeah, no, definitely. That's definitely a leveraged lifestyle. That's a real family business. Wow. And no. So what was that kind of moment that you discovered property and thought, you know what, why am I in a job? I need to go back to my entrepreneurial spirit and get into property.
I mean, I think it was just a friend of my dad's, and he'd heard of Progressive, and my dad wanted to go along because he'd recently retired, so he was looking for new ways to invest. So he just it was one of these free 1 day events. He just said, "Do you want to go along to it?" Not thinking much of it at the time, I went along and I thought, "Wow, like." You don't need hundreds of thousands in your back pocket to start.
Yeah.
So it all just went from there, really.
And, you know, so you went to that event, you kind of thought, actually, no, this is something I can do. I don't need tons of money to do it. So I'm guessing you didn't start off by purchasing property. Tell me about, like, what your strategy is or was when you first started.
I kind of went through every strategy possible. First one was flips, so looked for investment for flips. Then I looked at HMOs, and then getting investment wasn't quite as easy as I thought it might be. So then I looked at deal packaging. That was something that I could do, and I was getting some nice lump sums of cash in, which was nice. And then I went to PPN Mayfair, and I can't remember who was meant to be speaking, but they pulled out. And that's when Paul Smith did a 15-minute speech about serviced accommodation, in particular rent to rent. And I was like, yes, that's it. That's finally found, you know, what I thought I'd be good at. So
yeah,
and that was, I think that was probably about 11 months ago.
Wow. Okay. So then, after you had that kind of that light bulb moment, what was your first deal like? Talk me through where it was, what it was, the figures, and yeah.
Yeah. So the first deal after that, obviously, I went. And educated myself a lot more in service accommodation. Then set up a little brand, all the nice bits, making your logo, setting up the business card, thinking I had this business. And then it came to actually going out and sourcing the properties, which is very difficult, especially at first. So the first deal took me, well, it only took me 3 weeks, but that was 3 weeks of 7 days a week just viewings, nagging landlords, and I probably got, I think it must have been 50 or 60 no's before I got the first apartment. And yeah, so I got an apartment. It was a 2-bed apartment in Sheffield city centre, really run down. The rent was £650 a month. Just pretty much through a letting agent who had a investor in Hong Kong, and they sort of just wanted this stock off the hands. So yeah, that was the first deal.
Wow.
And yeah, obviously put it online, and get some bookings in.
And so you got off the landlord. The rent to the landlord was, did you say, 650?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's to the landlord. You're going to give them every month. How much did you spend refurbing it?
Pretty much nothing, because I did it all myself, really. It was pretty much just bit of painting and obviously refurnished it. At that point, I was cutting costs everywhere I could, so I took I put my own sofa and sacrificed my TV off my bedroom wall, put that in there, and yeah. So all in all, that came everything in deposit, rent, everything came to £2,000.
Okay, so you had £2,000 cash is what you need, what you needed to start in Sheffield, right?
Exactly. So, well, initially, I should have probably said this bit at the first. I was in, because I'd spent quite a bit of money on training and networking, my bank account wasn't looking the best. credit cards had been used quite often. So even for the initial seed bit of money that I needed, which I calculated to be around £7,000, I had to look elsewhere. So I got my, that's when I met my first business partner. It was pretty much just a friend from school who had also showed an interest in property. So he gave me a loan of £7,000 to get started.
Okay. And then so he gave you £7,000 to get started, and then you spent about £2,000 of that on your first deal. Is that right?
Exactly.
And then so I think what worries people when it comes to SA, and what worries me when I looked at it, is am I going to get bookings? Are people going to come to my place? Are they going to like it? Is it going to continue? Yeah. So like your first few months, how were they? Were you fully booked? Was there no interest at all? Were you losing money? Like, talk me through the first couple of months.
Yeah, it was pretty much instantaneous. As soon as it went on booking.com, I think in the first 2 or 3 days, we'd already got like at least £1,000 in, which I absolutely couldn't believe. Within 2 weeks, we'd got our full investment back, and then it just, yeah. So from month one, we made a profit, which I don't know of any other business model to be honest, that you can do that. So yeah, the platforms that we've got available to us, Airbnb, Booking.com, and all the rest of them, really are unbelievable for small startups. To be able to get that sort of coverage is just amazing.
And so how about things like the competition around you and the location of where yours was based and the kind of decor? Like, what do you think made yours stand out so much that with no reviews, which, you know, nowadays reviews are such a big thing, how did you do so well without reviews in previous bookings? What was it about this apartment?
It was nothing about the apartment in particular. Obviously, I thought it was absolutely amazing, but looking back now, it was it was quite laughable. But no, it's just choosing the right area. So when I first started in Sheffield, which is, Sheffield's a big city. I think it's the fifth biggest in the UK.
Wow, okay.
There was, I think, around 15 service departments.
Okay.
Which, yeah, there should have been more. Hence why I've tripled that number over the last year. And even when we're still adding apartments, the demand's definitely still there. So yeah, I think maybe landing on a good area.
No, sure. Wow.
Was quite beneficial.
Yeah, and then, you know, let's say you had to start again, or, you know, continue in an area that had quite a bit of competition. What sort of things could, let's say Central London, right? It's absolutely rampacked full of service apartments. If someone wants to start doing SA in Central London, because I know you do it there as well, which we'll get to in a bit, what sort of tips would you give to people when they're entering a heavily competitive SA location or market?
Yeah, so in that situation, it's harder. Your apartments need to stand out. They're going to stand out on the decor, the photographs, the reviews, and the price. So decors, photographs, very easy. They're the two things that you need to be doing right, because there's no reason that anyone shouldn't be doing those things perfectly. Reviews, not so easy. So you've got to put in the legwork. And pricing, obviously, there's going to be people out there that own their properties, therefore haven't got the rent to pay that we have to pay.
Yeah.
So they can therefore afford to put their properties on for cheaper. So when you're looking at your pricing, obviously for our price to come down, our costs need to come down. So you need to be really scrutinizing all the costs in your business. Your main ones being obviously rent, but there's not going to be a huge deal of movement on that. But linen hire, cleaners, maintenance, which are all things that's easy to say now. Now we've scaled up, but at the start, I'm not saying I did it the right way, but yeah, I was doing absolutely everything. I was cleaning, doing the maintenance, doing every self-check-in, which after I got to about 3 apartments, I was like, this is absolutely no life. 7 days a week check-ins. But I would definitely advise that to anyone, because by doing the cleaning and the maintenance and the check-ins, I therefore got an idea of how long it takes to clean and what sort of challenges the cleaners have. Therefore, I knew how like the time scales and how much to pay them.
Yeah.
I also was meeting all the guests, and I therefore knew my target market, who I should be aiming our advertisements at. And yeah, you just feel more involved in the business, and if you know the shortfalls yourself, it's a lot easier to manage your staff.
Okay, so then you started off with that one apartment. You obviously scaled up quite a lot. So, and it was 11 months ago you started, right?
That's when I first had the idea. I started the company, I think it's about 8.5, 9 months ago.
And you've been doing it full time ever since, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's just call it 9 months. How many rent to SAs do you currently have in your company under your name, your management?
So we've got 44, I believe, at the minute. They're spread across Sheffield and London.
Wow. So you've gone from 0 to 44 in 9 months.
Yeah, and they're just the ones that we have on rent to rent. We've recently started Luso Management, which is our management company. So obviously we've got management clients in there as well.
And how many management clients would you say you have?
So I think we've got about 8 at the minute.
Wow.
We've not even fully launched it. They're just the people that we've met at networking events and we've told them about it. So we've not done any advertising or anything like that. But yeah, I think obviously that's the way, it's a natural progression, I think, what it seems to be of scaling SA businesses that they set up and management. Obviously better for VAT and things like that.
Yeah, and of course, you know, once you've run one yourself, then people will trust you to run theirs, right? Because it's you've been there, done that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all our rent-to-rent units are now managed by our management company. So, yeah, it's pretty much...
It makes sense, yeah, for tax.
Yeah, and as you're pitching to someone to manage their apartment... it's pretty much like you're saying that we do it ourselves and we also manage all our own apartments ourselves. So it's like I suppose people doing property courses and things, they've got a lot more credibility if they're actually property investors themselves.
Yeah.
You're not going to take advice off someone about managing an SA unit unless they themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's kind of, so a lot of people want to get into SA. It's, you know, especially at the moment, it's quite a hyped word and kind of strategy and everyone seems to be in it and, you know, everyone's talking about it and you always hear about it at different events. Now, let's say someone listening wanted to get started in SA now and rent to SA specifically. What, you know, if you had to put together, I don't know, like a 4-part strategy. So Imagine me, I'm Tej, I understand property, I understand how rent to SA works, I've got all the knowledge you could ever wish for, all the theory. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here with my computer, what do I do to go from that to having a property as an essay?
Yeah. So this is probably the hardest part, especially for your first one. When anyone asks me about sourcing, I pretty much give them an exact script of what I say. So first thing, get on Rightmove, get on Zoopla, look at all the apartments in your area that fit the brief. Obviously, you need to choose, first of all, what sort of market you're going for. So I've got a niche of literally, I only take 2 bedrooms, city centre. That's it. Same in London, 2 bedrooms, zone one. So obviously, then you go on the Rightmove, Zoopla, find possible apartments that fit the bill. You then call the agent or the landlord if it's open rent or anything like that. And this is the part that I really messed up at the start, because I'd call them and I'd say, I've got this fantastic new strategy. What I do, I put it on booking.com, I put it on Airbnb and all this stuff. And you can imagine what response I got to that.
yep.
A lot of, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Why would we do that? I actually got called rude by one who said, wait a minute, you're just making money off someone else's property. I'm like, well, you're a letting agent. That's
yeah.
Anyway, so tip number one is just book the viewing. Don't tell them about what you're doing, because obviously they're invested. When they actually make time to go to that viewing, they're invested their time into it. It's a lot easier. It's a lot harder, sorry, for them to, you know, just say no over the phone. So that's tip one. Just go book a viewing, go to it and do the pitch while you're there. So when you're at the viewing, obviously, like I just said, don't do the whole this amazing new strategy and all the rest of it. Just completely act like it's the norm. And the agent usually responds in a way as if to say, they don't want to come across stupid, so they just say, okay, yeah. So what you need to be saying to them is putting it in a way that sounds a bit less risky, if you like. Shall we say, usually they'll ask you on the viewing, is the property for yourself?
Yeah.
And you say, no, unfortunately not. I would love to live here, but it's for a company let. So we take a company let agreement with you guys, just pay the normal rent deposit. So that'll all be the same process. And then we just get our corporate clients in, which kind of, they're not necessarily all corporate clients, but that's what they like to hear. And then once you're further in the process, you explain more about it. Some agents won't have a clue what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Agents will know exactly what you're talking about, and then they'll probably respond by saying, oh, do you mean like a booking.com, Airbnb? And then you say, yeah, so we use them platforms as well, but most of our bookings are direct bookings for big companies that are working in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And that little script seems to work fine. So, yeah, regarding that, just don't blur everything out. Try and hold back. Act like it's the norm. And they usually respond fairly well to that.
Okay. And so then once you've spoken to them, they're cool with it, you then put an offer to the landlord, or to the landlord via the agent. Is there anything in particular that people should be wary of or do not when they are offering a kind of rent to SA to a landlord?
Yeah, so first things first, well, at the first, I went with my own management agreement, and that's when that starts ringing alarm bells for the agent and the landlord, because it's not their company one that they know, and there could be anything in there, really. So use their company letter agreement, the agent, and just change. You might have to change a couple of bits. So usually with a company letter agreement, it's designed for companies who have their employees staying in there. You would change that to from employees to guests. That's usually the only change you have to make. So that's regarding the actual agreements. Regarding the apartment block itself, you will need permission. Some apartment blocks have got things written in the head of lease which completely disallow service departments. You need to find that out. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of people that do it under the radar, and 90% of the time, the management company, as long as you're not causing an issue, won't be bothered. But yeah, for your first few deals, get all the permissions you need. The agent will do this if you ask the agent to find out with the owner. They'll be able to find that out. So they're the two things really that you might trip up on: the agreement and the actual permission in the block.
Okay, and so you've sourced a property using online portals. You've done your viewings in the kind of way you suggested, which is not lying, but not being totally honest, but being professional with it.
I mean, that's the sort of stuff they're not going to tell you on the property courses. But yeah.
Yeah. But you know, it's the truth, and it's what you've done. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing right with it. It's what you've done. It's your approach. So if anyone listening, you can take that approach. You can try different approaches. If anyone has a different approach that also works, let me and Alex know. We'd love to hear it. But I think that's interesting, because when I've been looking at rent to rents or rent to SAs, and I've spoken to agents, most of them, maybe it's just where I am in London, most of them seem to know. So I'll just say, corporate let, do you have landlords interested in this? And they say, yeah, actually, we've got three who would be interested, but the rest probably not. Or they say, look, we've done this before, no one's interested, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's kind of been quite an open discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. London, you're sure to find an agent that doesn't know about it.
Yeah.
In a lot of other areas, Sheffield being one of them, and a few areas around Sheffield, you'll struggle to find an agent that does know about it. So like you say, it does completely depend.
Yeah.
In the area.
Absolutely. So you have to adapt to your market. So now you've found the property, you have viewed it, you've said, yep, this is the one for me.
Yeah.
I'm taking it on. You've offered the landlord, it's been accepted. Now, from that point onwards, really briefly, what would you now do to get yourself some bookings?
Okay. First of all, I just thought we should probably go back a couple of steps, because there's one thing you should do before ever even booking a viewing, and that's do look at the demand in the area, the prices in the area. On Airbnb, you can see how much they're actually getting booked. So it's not just about looking at the prices. You need to know that it's actually getting booked at those prices. Look at future prices. And also put it through a stress test spreadsheet that I'll send to you later on, Tej.
Awesome. I'll send that out for everyone.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's no point in looking at a property unless it works. And that, the beauty of this model with Booking.com and Airbnb, you can literally see the prices for every single day for a year in advance in that area for that particular type of apartment. So... to get an apartment that doesn't work must mean that you've not done your due diligence. So yeah, it's really simple to do. Put a few numbers in the spreadsheet, work out all your costs. So yeah, that's a step you should definitely be doing before you actually get to even looking at a property.
Okay, good.
And then yeah, when it comes to bookings, If you can, you want to be getting the property online well before you get the keys, and taking bookings. We actually only use three platforms now, which is Booking.com, Airbnb, and Expedia. Because they are just the main. Well, Booking.com is absolute powerhouse. Airbnb is catching up. And Expedia, we do get a few bookings in from there, but all the others, we might get one or two, but for the difficulties they caused with the channel manager, we decided against it. So yeah, get your property advertising out there as soon as you possibly can. This is obviously difficult because you're not going to have the pictures. At a point where you've scaled and you might already have a couple in that block that you're operating in, you can use those pictures as long as it's a similar apartment. But yeah, that's going to massively help you. Another couple of things to be aware of When you first put your property on booking.com, if it's your first one, I know this is the process I had to go through, and it was a pretty gruesome one, which is they will not let you take card payments, because essentially they don't know who you are, they don't know that you're trustworthy company. So that meant I was taking cash payments from all the guests upon check-in for the first, I think it was about 3-4 weeks, which means that they don't have to turn up really. So yeah, you can have no shows and they don't pay. This is just until you've built some sort of trust with booking.com, and then they will allow you to take card details and CVC codes and the rest of it. I'm not sure if that is still the case, or if they've changed anything up. It's one thing you definitely need to be aware of. Because if you can't take upfront payments, it's
I can imagine
not much of cash flow anymore.
And so you use all these platforms, you get people booking, and you've obviously had it in most of your places where the bookings just roll in. Now, when it comes to the kind of operational side, because I've spoken to some people who say, oh yeah, you know, I manage SA from my phone a couple hours a day, is quite straightforward, it's all leveraged and outsourced. And some people say, yeah, I kind of do that, but there's still so much I have to do, especially at the start. Would you say SA is quite time intensive and quite operationally heavy, or does it vary from beginning to middle of your kind of journey?
Yeah, it certainly varies. But I mean, there's no secret that SA is very laborious and time consuming, especially at the start. I was certainly busier when I had three apartments than I am now, because obviously I was doing everything myself. When you have all the systems in place, all running smoothly, it can be just run from your phone. It is right. And there's no reason why those systems and softwares shouldn't be in place from day one.
Yeah. Okay. And so when it comes to, you know, which is something that a lot of people want to know, is how much money can you make from SA? Now, we know with single lets, you get, you know, most of the time, a couple hundred quid a month profit. HMOs, around a grand. Rent to HMOs, potentially, you know, 800 to a grand to plus. You know, these kind of figures are kind of well known. Everyone knows them. But with SA, you know, obviously due to the nature of SA, it can go up and down. But, you know, if you had to, across all your units that you are doing rent to SA on, you know, what are you turning over, and then what is your profit every month or 6 months or 3 months or however you measure it? Because it'd be great for people to get an understanding of where you've gone from zero to where you are now in that kind of short 9 months.
Yeah. So at the minute, we're turning over around 130,000 a month.
Wow.
The profits on that are, I'd say, over the Sheffield and the London properties, we're looking around £1,000 per net profit per apartment. And that, some of them are only earning £400 net. Mm. And some of them earn £2,000 net. But so the ones that earn the smaller amounts, that's when we manage the full block. And operationally wise, it's very easy. So, and the ones that are higher, they're harder to manage. So, so it completely varies. But yeah, it's obviously to say you don't own the property, fantastic profits from there.
Absolutely. And doing the sort of maths, there is a load of turnover, over £1 million a year. But the profit is quite a lot less. And that's normal for most businesses. So what is your biggest cost or costs that it kind of give you that margin?
Yeah, so there's a hell of a lot of costs. There's rent being your main one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know yourself, rents in London don't compete.
Yep.
Your next one is cleaning, closely followed by linen hire. And you've also got all the utilities, maintenance, obviously, when you scale up staff. So yeah, there's a lot of costs involved, which is why if you do get the wrong property, because the turnover is that high, if your margins are slightly out, you could end up being in trouble. And I have heard quite a few sort of horror stories, if you like, with SA, where people have gone into it a bit blind, and maybe just bought into one of these deals where someone puts together 20 properties in a block and people take two or three of them, and then they set them up for them and manage them. People have come a bit unstuck with those. But touch wood, we've never lost on a property. We've got one in London that we break even on. And that was the first time we went out of zone one. So we got an apartment in Ealing, which is...
Oh, yeah, down the road for me, okay.
Yeah, stunning apartment, a penthouse. It's absolutely amazing. Obviously, it's 5 minutes from the tube station. It's in between an English a language school and a university. So we thought we'd absolutely hit the jackpot with that one. And we just didn't... Well, obviously, we did all our research in the area, the prices. And yeah, it just didn't work out. So we make small profits on that, £300-£400. Some months we break even. So I think we're going to stick to someone. But...
Hey, no, you ventured out and, you know, you made a mistake, but it's not a costly mistake. It's a lesson, no, right, that you've learned.
Exactly.
So that's interesting. And I guess, go on.
It shows an essay that even if you do make a mistake, to break even on a mistake is fairly good.
No, it really is. And so, you know, 0 to 9 months, you've now got to the point where, so £1,000 a month average net profit per unit, and you had how many units? You have how many units?
44.
So I'll leave the listeners to do the maths, but that's you know, a month, and the net profit is a lot higher than a lot of, you know, salaries in London, right? After a month.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic. Obviously, when I was unemployed in credit card debt this time last year, I would have never dreamed that we'd have got to this point. But yeah, I think it's not a reflection on me. It's a reflection on the business model. Yeah. It really does work when done right.
Now, I'm going to disagree with you. Yes, it is a reflection on the business model, but I think you're being humble, because it's absolutely a reflection on you, because anyone can take an amazing business model and do it wrong, right? They can make mistakes. They can not make any money from it. You could give someone the absolute strategy to become a millionaire, but they won't, right? So,
yeah, I mean, I appreciate it. You've got to get out there and do it. I mean, but the point is, I've not done anything out of the ordinary. I've not got a master's degree in anything. So yeah, it's just pushing to make it work.
Absolutely, it's that persistence, that grit, and that kind of determination to, you know what, this needs to work, and it's going to work. And you had, you know, a great business model to utilize. So what are you doing next in property? Are you very much going to just do SA? Are you going to do buy-to-lets, HMOs, commercial conversions, land? You know, what are you getting into next?
Yeah, so the next step is obviously building our management company, which obviously it's a new company, but everything's already in place there. We've already got... a nice first customer, which is ourselves.
So we've got a nice turnover in that company. Get, yeah.
Yeah. So that's instantly from day one, got a nice turnover to get staff and build it and make that one of London's premier sort of Airbnb management companies. That's the plan. Okay. So we think that's probably going to take about a year if we get the right people involved. And then what we really want to do, obviously, is own property. So what we want to do is commercial conversions to, well, apartments, then to SA.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense. And would you do that in Sheffield or London or somewhere else?
We do that in Sheffield.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it, I
And
mean, the numbers in Sheffield just because we're making similar net profits in Sheffield than we are to what we are in London. But obviously the initial outlay is so much less. For example, our first customer in our management company, it was kind of a guinea pig because obviously we're just trying out all the systems. It was my good friend Alex. So he just finished university and he had about 3 or 4,000 pounds that he wanted to invest rather than just spend it. Obviously, I've been speaking to him about it constantly because that's pretty much all I ever talk about. So we sourced him an apartment. He set it up. His full investment was 3,000. That's obviously including first month's rent and deposit. And even after management, in July, he made £1,150.
Wow.
Which, when you look at a return on investment, is quite incredible.
So let's just say, so he gave you £3,000. That's it, and said, look, press the button on his bank transfer, send the £3,000 off, and you went, sourced the property, refurb it, basically did everything you need to do, and then also manage it for him, and then he gets the
Exactly.
money every month.
Yeah, I mean, because he was as the first one in there, and we wanted to try it, we didn't charge him a sourcing fee or a setup fee.
Okay.
Hence why the investment was only 3K. But yeah, so he made in his first month he made £500 profit, then 1,150, and then he made 575, I think. And this month is looking pretty good. So yeah, it pretty. Certainly proves the model.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gives us a lot of confidence, and yeah, he's certainly quite happy.
I can imagine just come out of uni to be investing already. That's good.
Exactly.
So look, what I'll do is I'll put your contact details in the show notes and at the end of the show, so that if anyone wants to get in touch with you, talk about things like that, or just talk SA, or just see what you're up to, they can get in touch with you. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Awesome. And so one thing I want to ask you is, and so this is quite a broad question, and I ask everyone this on the show, so feel free to answer it however you want to. What are your thoughts on the property market in your area? So you could say Sheffield or London, or you could focus on serviced apartments in each area. Just answer it however you want.
Probably do Sheffield, because I know a lot more about it. And it's pretty much a booming market. There is, I think, 10 plus apartment blocks going up in Sheffield right now in the city centre, which is unheard of. There's extreme amount of Chinese investment, and yeah, it's absolutely booming. When all these blocks are being built, it'd be interesting to see what happens to the rental prices. But yeah, I think, and obviously anyone listening to this that might think about investing in Sheffield, you have got to sort of compete against the all this Chinese investment. So it might be difficult, but it's certainly a place that I want to start buying property in.
Okay, fantastic. And that sadly brings us to the end of the show. However, we have one segment remaining. Now, this is called the quickfire round. So the first thing I want to ask as part of the quickfire round is, what are the three worst aspects of running an SA business?
Ooh, number one's quite easy. Unhappy guests. We try and keep them to a minimum, but some guests, any SA operators that are listening will know that some guests it's impossible to keep them happy. So that's number one. Number two is managing cleaners. For me, unfortunately, a lot of people in the UK see cleaning as a very replaceable job. So yeah, if they don't turn up and the rest of it, they don't bother. They know they're just gonna get another job. So managing cleaners is a headache. What did I say? Number three. I mean, all the rest of it is fairly good, to be honest.
you can cap it at two if it's that good. You can cap it at two.
Yeah, I think it is that good.
Awesome. And then what would be your top three tips for new people getting into SA? What would you tell yourself 9 months ago from what you know now?
I would say, obviously, take my tips on the sourcing, because you'll save yourself a lot of time rather than cold calling and all the rest of it. That was my downfall at the beginning. I would say when it comes to sourcing, don't be too track-minded in thinking that it's only right move. So a lot of my stock has come from direct to developer, landlords. So yeah, and just speaking to people. SA is one of those things that everyone's interested in when you speak to them about it. And they tell two other people, and then you get a lot coming through those avenues.
Perfect. And then quite a specific one now. When people are picking an area to focus their SA business in, a geographical region, what would be your top three tips for finding the perfect region?
I would say the easiest way to look at the price per night compared to the rental in the area. That's a pretty easy way to tell. Mm-hmm. Sheffield is pretty incredible in that sense, because you get apartments for £700 per month and the price per night can be in excess of £200, which is pretty crazy. Obviously look at the amount of stock in the area as well, which brings me on to something. An area that I'm going into has actually got zero service departments.
Wow.
Which, as you can imagine, makes the whole stress testing and due diligence process a lot harder, because you've got not a great deal to compare it to. But it, as far as I'm concerned, every area has got space for at least one. So if you find an area that like that one, just go for it. You will break even at the absolute worst. So yeah, look at areas where no one else is doing it.
Okay, so look at demand of the area, I guess, was one of them. Look at the, and also look at the price of rental versus the price of the service departments per night. Try go into areas that people aren't already in. What about something like looking at big businesses nearby or industrial parks? Do you look at that kind of stuff?
Yeah, of course. There's websites out there where you can find the big businesses. Obviously, you're not going to go into an area that's not got that supply, because that in most, I mean, obviously, unless you've got a little villa in a nice holiday resort, a lot of the stuff in the UK, the bulk is going to be not leisure. It's going to be, certainly for myself anyway, it's people working away. So if you're going for that market, obviously you want to be looking in the area, the big businesses, the retail parks, the business parks, sorry. And yeah, that's always a good sign.
Perfect. Well, look, Alex, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. I think it's good for people to see how quickly things can progress. Doesn't mean they always will progress as quickly as you, or as maybe as straightforward as you. You know, everyone has different journeys and stories. But I think it's good for everyone to see how it could be done, and to see it like a real bloke just getting on with it and doing it, really. So, yeah, thank you so much for being on the show. I hope the listeners find a lot of value in what you've said, in that kind of whistle-stop tour of how to go from zero to your first SA unit. Thank you so much.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. I mean, like we spoke about before, my social media coverage is absolutely nil, pretty much. So it's nice to be able to sort of tell the story over the last year. Hopefully, people can get some benefit out of it.
No, most definitely. And look, I always harp on about how important social media is. So maybe this is the kick up the backside to get on it more, maybe. Who knows?
Exactly.
Perfect. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
If you like this podcast, connect with Tej on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more great content.